You've never heard of them. You won't see them bronzed up on a Sunset Strip billboard or chasing 20-something models on Love Island. They have a collective total of zero Heisman trophies and Cy Youngs between them. They won't be walking the red carpet or hosting an Oscar anytime soon. When they get free drink tickets on an airplane, you bet your ass they fucking use them. It's just two guys trying to make it happen. Trying to raise kids, take care of their families, and dropping in on your airspace for 15 minutes in hopes that you get a little something out of it, and maybe even put a little something in as well. It's two guys, one podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Alleman and Brian Harris. I don't understand.
Greetings, everybody. Brian Harris and Ron Alleman here. Two guys, one podcast. So, Ronnie, some sobering news in the live entertainment world this week. Unfortunately, we'll start there. We lost a good one, didn't we?
Yeah, I know. We're talking about Eddie Van Halen today. Rock legend, guitar legend, former member of Van Halen. One of my favorite bands, Brian, when I was growing up. You know, I probably started listening to them when I was in fourth grade. Introduced them by my older brother. It was my first concert I went to, I think, when I was in 9th or 10th grade, the OU812 tour with Sammy. But yeah, Eddie was, he was the epicenter of rock, man. Just what an incredible guitarist. Really sad to hear of his passing.
No doubt. I mean, talk about a band that was certainly a big part of my formative years. And as a sidebar, I gotta say, some of those videos from the MTV days, like Hot for Teacher, really got me through some difficult parts of puberty, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Hot for Teacher was great. One of the greatest videos from the 80s, I think. Panama, Jump, good stuff, man.
Yeah, it was, and incidentally, Ron, I didn't know that Eddie was sick. He, this may surprise our listeners out there, but we're not on a first name personal basis. I think he was pretty quiet about the whole ordeal. I think a lot of people were caught off guard by it, but very sad nonetheless. And you know, I think as we sort of run through some of the discography of Van Halen, obviously there's the comparison between the Sammy days and David Lee Roth days. How do you fashion yourself? Are you a David Lee Roth guy or a Sammy guy, would you say?
That's such a great conversation, I think, because both of those guys are great. You got David Lee Roth, who started off with them, and really just that awesome front man, that rock and roll dirty guy, you know. Just is it the video Panama where you see him backstage and there's like three cops trying to carry him out of the fucking dressing room and he can barely walk, he's just so wasted. And then you got Sammy, and I think, you know, the band was a little bit more mature then, and Sammy came in after he had his solo career going for a while. He was hot, man, and they brought him in. He did a great job. I probably, just maybe because of my age, you know, I caught the band, I, you know, got into them when Sammy was kind of coming in. It was kind of the end of David Lee Roth, so maybe I'm more of a Sammy guy. What about you?
You know, it's kind of a split decision for me, because from a fashion point of view, as you well know, I fashion myself more as a David Lee Roth guy. I happen to have a couple outfits hanging in my closet that are very similar to some of the fashion leanings you'll see from David Lee Roth from the early days, Hot for Teacher and the like. But that aside, I gotta say I'm more of a David Lee Roth guy. I mean, I think Sammy did a very good job fronting the band during the latter portion of the Van Halen tenure. But you know, when you look at albums like 5150 and then songs like Running with the Devil and Panama and Hot for Teacher, and I just think for me it's a little bit more edgy, a little bit more grit to it than the Sammy days, but that's nothing to take away from the Sammy era either. And by the way, Sammy makes a hell of a good tequila.
He does, right? And you know, let me say something, let's back it up a bit, because you and David Lee Roth, you guys have a similar body build. You both got luxurious, flowing blonde hair.
No, that's
same
not
height.
True at all.
I think you're both about 6'2". He's athletic. You're athletic.
Is he?
Have you ever tried doing one of those David Lee Roth kicks where he just spins around and does a roundhouse?
You know, it's funny you ask, because in preparation for this episode, I actually tried one not too long ago, and lo and behold, really? I think I ruptured something in my lower back. So
yeah, I wouldn't fuck with that right now.
Yeah, I mean,
no
I don't
way.
Know what kind of
no way would I even try? Would I even attempt to do that?
I don't know what kind of height I got on that. I think we'd have to go to the street to get a real read on that. But in fact, I think if someone were to a casual passerby were to see what I was doing, they would have thought I was trying to like kill swat a fly or maybe
yeah.
I was in some sort of peril of some sort. But but yeah, I don't know that our similarities other than the height really align too much. But I appreciate the nod. I mean, listen,
they were,
glad to I be mean, compared yeah. to David Lee Roth.
So one of the cool things that I kind of read back in the day about Eddie Van Halen, you know, he was getting to be a bit more experimental with Sammy, I think. I feel that he did with Dave. I don't think he got the encouragement. And again, I don't want to fucking say something that's not true, but this is what I kind of remember. And if you go back, we have this queued up here, but if you listen to this very end of Jump, Eddie's got a little riff, the outro riff, and listen to it right here. So you can hear that, not the synthesizer, but just that guitar outro. That would later become the intro to Top of the World off of their For a Mouthful Carnal Knowledge album. But they, you know, obviously Sammy was the lead singer. But so now listen to that one. This is just the beginning of Top of the World.
Ah.
See that?
Little rock history. Little Van Halen
little rock history. Little known fact.
I did not know that.
It was wild stuff.
That's wild, wild, wacky stuff, Ron. I did not know that.
That is wild.
That's good stuff, man. Well, whoever knew that you were going to tune into Two Guys, One Podcast and leave a little bit more educated in the world of rock, thanks to one Ron Allen.
That's what I do, guys.
It's what you do. It's all for the people. It's what we do. So, Ronnie, maybe that's a nice transition, and rest in peace, Sir Eddie Van Halen.
Rest in peace, Eddie.
Toggle to another, not death experience, but a near-death experience. And I know we exchanged a text yesterday on your way back from Mexico, and it sounds like you had a pretty scary ordeal there, and been waiting all day to hear you unveil it. So why don't you hit
us? Yeah, I've been saving this for the podcast. I know I wanted to tell you about it, and I have some other friends that were kind of asking me if I was okay. This is a story about my family and I, my wife, my two kids. We took a trip down to Mexico for a week, and about our second day, we were in Puerto Vallarta, and we decided to go to the beach, and we're keeping it very low key, very chill. So we found a beach where there were hardly any people there. There were a lot of boats, and it's just small little, it's not private, but people just don't really know about it. It's just north of, south of Vallarta, like old town Vallarta. And we had somebody that was with us that lives down there, and his friend owns a little restaurant right on the ocean there. So we all went there. There was a group of 18 of us, all right, family and friends, mostly family from Mexico. So we get there, and we're in very, very shallow water at this point. Okay. We're just in the ocean, and it's a really crazy part of the ocean. It's a part where there's a river. The ocean feeds into this little river. So you don't have very large waves, but the tow is very strong. You have like this little current that's kind of sucking down the river, and then the waves are coming in, and it's making these little weird type of like returns back to the ocean. So it wasn't horrible. And I'm not lying when I tell you that it was not even waist high. It was between the knee and the waist. And my wife and I are both out there, and we're watching the kids. So you guys know I have a 5-year-old who's just barely learned to swim. I took a little bit of time the day before, and he can swim, but he's 5 years old. So he needs some help out there. And then my 11-year-old, who's a very strong swimmer. And then we had my niece, and she's about 13. She does not know how to swim, but she's tall, and she's like my height. So the water was not deep at all. So we're out there. Everything's totally cool, and there's no danger, no danger at all. And it happens that the sand, when you're standing there and it's barely waist high, there's a huge drop off, and no one can see this drop off, but it's there. And you know, I had already surveyed the area. I thought that we were completely safe, and we had our eyes on the kids. These kids were not 5 feet away from us. And my wife and I, as we're talking, she looks over and she starts screaming to me, "Oh my God, the boys, look at them. Looks like they're drowning." And the first thing I did, I just started walking, like started not walking, but like moving, running toward them. And then I fall off. So now I'm underwater, but I'm a really good swimmer. So I start going toward them, and this current is pulling all of us out now, because now we're not stable. We're not standing on sand, and now we're starting to go out to the ocean. Like in a matter of a second, this happened. Okay. So this isn't a matter of you need to watch your kids. This is a matter of we're watching our kids and this is happening in front of our eyes. So my little one, my 5-year-old goes underwater. My 11-year-old goes underwater, and Haley goes underwater. Haley's the niece. So my wife is not a very strong swimmer. So we both take off after them, and we both don't see this sand shelf just take a plunge. So now all 5 of us are underwater. So I get up, I grab the first person I see, and it's Haley. She's the furthest out. Okay, so she's like in the most danger right now. So I grab her. My wife is trying to grab my boys, but my wife can't swim that well. So I'm grabbing Haley, and I'm swimming, and I feel like I'm going nowhere. And the whole time I'm swimming, I'm trying to touch the ground, because if I touch the ground, it's golden. We're totally fine. And she's scared to death, and she's on me, and she's got my throat, and she's on top of my head. So I'm being pushed underwater even more. And now I can't even see where my boys are. So I go under as hard as I can. And again, I'm a very strong swimmer. I used to be a lifeguard back in the day. I don't look like it now, but I used to be one. So I'm not afraid of the water. I go under as deep as I can to get away from her. And I swim up with all my might, and I just shove her toward the shore with one hand. I swim toward her a little bit more, but I feel I'm standing still. So I go under again, and I push her as hard as I can. Now, by this point, my wife is screaming for help. You know, I'm screaming for help. And people are looking at us like we're crazy, because they're standing 5 or 6 feet away, and they can understand why we're fighting so hard just to get up from there, because they don't see that this thing has kind of fallen. There's this big shelf, this ledge. So there's a boat that comes by. They're looking at us. One of the guys jumps off the boat, grabs my wife. He pulls her in. My 11-year-old, being the strong swimmer that he is, actually saves the 5-year-old.
Oh my God.
And I'm able to get Haley close enough to the water where someone can pull her in. So she's taken care of. The boys are there. Someone's attending to my wife. I'm holding on now to the side of this boat that's right next to us. And honestly, these people are looking at us like, are you guys kidding? Are you nuts? Are you crazy? It happened. It probably happened in all of 10 to 15 seconds. And when I think about it, it feels like this nightmarish ordeal that just happened. It took forever to kind of unfold and to happen. And then I'm sitting there and I'm on the beach. I'm trying to get my breath. This was almost every ounce of energy I had before I was going to freaking pass out. So I'm on the beach, on my knees, everyone's speaking Spanish. Some people are making sure I'm okay. One woman is there chastising me and basically yelling at me, what the hell was I doing? Am I drunk? And to be completely 100% honest, I had one drink at this point, because my whole thing was, I'm not going to drink until the kids are done swimming and we get some food and we start heading back. Then I'm going to relax with some beverages. So I had one drink just to kind of like, you know, to kind of join the crowd a little bit. So in Mexico, end of the day, everyone is safe and we're on the shore. But as a parent, I still feel like a failure, right? Because how did I let my kids and my family get into this crazy situation, man? So I'm having a hard time dealing with this. And in Mexico, and maybe this is not just Mexico, but when you have this kind of ordeal, they try to feed you bread right away to kind of like get some sugar into you. So I'm sitting there. I can't breathe. I'm trying to catch my breath, breathing in and out as hard as I can. Dry mouth because I've ingested I don't know how much of this ocean water. And they're giving me bread to eat. I'm looking at, and they're not speaking English, right? And my Spanish is not that great. So I'm looking at them like, what is this for? And they tell me, just eat it. I'm like, why? I'm like, because it's good for you right now. You need to eat it. It's going to help you. I took one bite of it. I feel like it was going to – now I'm going to choke. Now I'm really going to die because this bread is stuck in my throat here. So I take the loaf of bread and I throw it into the ocean. I spit out the bread I'm eating. And then I proceed to the group. And now my group other people, the other, you know, 16 people that were with, or 14 people, they didn't even see what was going on. And they're right on the shore at a table. They're eating, they're drinking. So we go back there and they're like, what the hell happened? So I do proceed at this point to have a very, very strong cocktail because Brian, I was shaking and I couldn't calm myself down. And then I noticed that my little one is crying his eyes out and he's with his grandpa who's there, my wife's dad, Eddie. Eddie's crying.
But Eddie wasn't involved, right?
Eddie was the one that got saved by Aiden. So my
I thought the girl did. It's
my younger. No. So my younger one saved, or my older one saved my younger one, and Eddie's crying. Eddie honestly didn't even know what happened. Eddie just went underwater for a second. Aiden swam with him into shore, and that was the end of their story. So Eddie's not crying because he's scared. Eddie's crying because he thought that I almost drowned. And when I think about this and I put it together, he's not so scared that his dad almost died. He's just crying because the day before I taught him to swim. So how the hell is his swim instructor drowning in 2 feet of water? So that's what I put together from Eddie being upset. And I got to tell you, I am just, you know, it was very, very scary. And I'm telling you guys a story because it happened to anyone in the blink of an eye. So I'm not saying to keep better watch of your kids. You know, what I would do next time we go into the ocean is just survey the area a little bit more, make sure that it's safer and I know what's going on. But to give it up to my kids, both of them, once we got everything sorted out and kind of calmed down, they both went back into the water and played it safe. And then the very next day, we went to a different beach down the shore a little bit, and we had a fantastic time playing in the waves again. And it was a much safer area. But I learned a lesson. I told the family that we just learned a lesson from Mother Nature. The ocean is awesome and she's huge and she's beautiful, but you got to respect it all time. So never let your guard down. But I'm just so proud of the family that we kind of got knocked down, stood up, dusted ourselves off, and kind of got back in there. So
an incredible story, not to make light of any of that, but I do have a couple follow-up questions for you just to really make
sure that
we have the full picture here. Do you think that there's a possibility that in your confusion and haste and intermediate Spanish level that maybe you asked for bread? That maybe said...
That wouldn't be necessarily unlike me to ask for some carbs. You know,
yeah. Maybe you had the sort of a blackout, and you were asking for bread in Spanish.
That could have been, that definitely could have been. I can see that happening. That's a good point.
And the other thing I was just curious about, because whenever I hear stories like this, it conjures up images of David Hasselhoff and Pam Anderson jogging down the beach, hair flowing in the breeze. Any Baywatch support at all? Was there any lifeguard support at all, I guess?
So in the ocean like this, there's no lifeguard support at ever. When you're at like a hotel or a resort, they all definitely have lifeguards, guys in boats. But this was one of those little kind of private beaches. And it's just basically, it's restaurants with grills and they're grilling fish and they're, you know, they're serving beers. And it's, you know, this is Mexico, so it's not exactly how we do things here, but no David Hasselhoff, no Pam Anderson. It was just us. So, but that's a great point. Maybe I should buy some Baywatch shorts and throw them on and, you know, whistle, jacket, sunglasses for next time.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe this could reinvigorate your career as a lifeguard and inspire you to moonlight, you know, over the summer.
That was one of the best times. I think I was all of 18 years old, maybe 19 when I was a lifeguard. So that was a little while ago.
Did you ever have to come to anyone's rescue during your tenure?
I did. I saved a couple people out there. I was a lifeguard near a lake in Portage, Indiana.
Do you want to mention them by name in case they're listening? Or,
well, you know what? It's been a while. I didn't catch their names. One of them was a little kid who was just way too small to be in the water, and his family kind of got away from him, and he was by himself. And I watched him, and I looked at him, and I was up in the stand, like in the lifeguard stand, and just in some sand was below me. And I saw him, and I thought, this kid, they're going to totally forget about him. Their backs were turned to him, and they were kind of walking away. And he was too little to be in the water that he was in, and he went under. I went out there and got him. And the second one was a kid, this girl, and she was, this is when I was near the pool, and she was in the deep end, and I looked at her, and she was afraid to go in the water. And I said, "Why are you afraid?" She was like, "I can't swim." And I said, "Well, then get out of the water." So instead of getting out, she just dove right into the deep end.
Wow.
And I just went right in there. No, and I think I was just coming. I was coming to work, and I wasn't even ready. I wasn't even in my Speedos yet. I was in my street clothes, and I dove in there and got her.
Wow. You rocked the Speedos, huh?
I think so. Probably back then I did.
Again, just to not make light of this, I'm really glad you're all right, obviously. And what a scary ordeal for sure. You know, if that had been me, I can 100% guarantee that not only I would have drowned, but everyone around me would have drowned, because I am the absolute world's worst swimmer. And a quick anecdote on that, as you know, many moons ago, I played tennis for Purdue, and we used to do this cross training series where we would actually go and cross train with the women's swim team, and they would come and do part of our workout. And the first time we did that, we decided we were going to have a relay race, men's tennis team against the women's swim team. And at the end of the race, my tennis coach pulled me aside, and he's like, "Brian, I got to tell you, man," he's like, "when you swim, it looks like there's an invisible person trying to drown you the entire time." And so it's not a pretty sight. And I can, like I said, I can categorically confirm that there's absolutely no way I would have survived that. And lucky for you and your family that you are such a strong swimmer. And
I don't want to argue with you, but I don't necessarily believe you, because you've got a swimmer's body. I mean, you're tall, you're lanky, you got those long arms, those weird feet.
Well, maybe back in the day. Now I'm more shaped like a Who from Whoville. So I don't know if that's considered a swimmer's build. I mean, there's maybe some natural buoyancy there is about all I can bank on. But
I don't think there's any water in Whoville. It's probably one of the reasons why they all live there.
So good stuff. Well, man, glad you're safe and sound. And sorry you went through all that, but I'm glad it all worked out. And
well, that's the thing, though, is like it sucks when you're going through it. But then when it's done, you're grateful. Mm-hmm. Like I was telling people, like, we just got a gift. We got a gift. We got a lesson. We learned, and that will never happen again. And we all made it out okay. Like, we're unscathed.
Well, thank God you're alive, my friend. Thank God you survived that. Not only because I love you, brother, but let's be honest, one guy, one podcast. It's a little redundant. Doesn't quite have the same ring to it. So the show will go on as a result of your harrowing survival. Have a great week. We'll talk to you a week from today.
See ya.
It's two guys, one podcast.